You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from. Welcome back to the Tell It Abs It Is podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. I am your host, Griffin Youngs, and before we jump into today's episode, first, as always, a word from our sponsor, DraftKings Sportsbook. Now, DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook to use, but it is also America's top-rated sportsbook, and it's pretty easy to understand why. They are easy to navigate, have plenty of instructions for new bettors, and nearly limitless ways to get in on all of the action, no matter the sport. And if you want to get in on the action with DraftKings Sportsbook, they've got a great offer for you, as DraftKings Sportsbook is putting you courtside with a chance to turn $1 into $100 in site credits. And all you have to do is pick any basketball team that is still in contention, bet $1, and if that team wins, you win $100 in site credits. That's right, any of the four remaining basketball teams still in contention, just $1. If you win that bet, you are bringing home $100. But don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook also offers great odds and promotions on baseball, hockey, and so much more all week long. And if you want to get in on the action as the championships begin to wrap up around the sports world, especially in hockey, DraftKings is the place for you. They are safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code THPN when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code THPN for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. So how's it going, everybody? Hope you've been enjoying your week and enjoyed Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. As I press record right now, Elliot Friedman with the first substantial rumbling, I guess you could call it, of the upcoming offseason. Nothing to do with the Avalanche, but this could be very well the first domino to fall of the offseason. This was tweeted at 4:58 Eastern Time. It is 4:59 Eastern Time, so as I press record, this is currently just happening. By the time this is up, this might be all done and dusted, but word is Chicago is working on sending Duncan Keith to the Pacific Northwest or Western Canada. So we don't have a team name just yet, but that could come down in maybe even the next few hours or the next few days or even be worked on farther than that. But that is more than likely probably going to be the first domino to fall in this offseason. I always like to see the first domino that falls, but nothing with the Avalanche as of right now. We're still waiting for some things. They've made some moves. They've re-signed Jonas Johansson to a league minimum contract for 1 year, two-way contract. I actually like that move a lot. I mean, you guys know I love JoJo. He's great. And he took a lot of unnecessary flack in Buffalo, especially getting traded out of Buffalo, being called the worst goalie seen in Buffalo in 19 years. I thought he performed very admirably when he showed up to play for the Avalanche this season as the presumptive number two for a little while until Devan Dubnyk showed up. But I truly, honest to God, have no problem with them. Sorry, it's 750, not 700,000 for JoJo. That's the new league minimum. I mean, in seven games with the Sabres last season, he was an 884, not good at all. The Avalanche trade for him, he plays eight games and he is a 913. That is very respectable numbers. It's crazy what happens when you put a solid defense in front of a goaltender. And with JoJo, he's still only 25. He's going to be 26 by the time next season rolls around. His birthday is September 19th, but JoJo is a solid number three option for this team, and it's not like we're signing him to be the backup for the team. He's it's a two-way deal. He's probably going to spend most of his time with the Colorado Eagles, more likely than not. I mean, this is not at all solving our goaltender situation. This is just kind of spinning the wheels, but I'm happy to see that we're giving JoJo another chance. I love the way he bounced back with the team. He always performed very admirably, and as a number three goalie, if that even, there's really nothing to complain about with him. I think he's a very solid goaltender. And what, like, as a third goalie, like, what are we going to be seeing? Like, 5 games, maybe 8 out of him if, like, everything goes wrong. And we still have a very volatile starting goaltender situation as it happens right now. So JoJo is going to be buried for a little while. This is probably the last we're going to talk about JoJo until, more than likely not, he starts another game next season. I mean, this might be the last time we talk about JoJo on this show at all, for depending on how the Avalanche go out and solve their goaltending situation. But I like it. I see no problem having him as a number three. If one of our goalies were to go down, I have absolutely zero problem starting him for a few games as like a backup goalie. I think he proved himself to be more than capable. I hope he does end up getting a shot next season and doesn't just get buried in the AHL. He hasn't really had like a true opportunity as a goaltender. He's played 21 total games, played 13 in Buffalo, 6 the year before, 7 last season, and then 8 with the Avalanche. I mean, and you put him on a good team that is not mired in losing like the Buffalo Sabres, who are the worst organization right now in the NHL. With like, there's nothing good happening in Buffalo right now. There's the Jack Eichel rumors and the Sam Reinhart rumors and literally everything. Like, they're about to just start over again. I mean, you can't imagine that it's a fun time to be there whatsoever if you're even just a backup goalie in Buffalo like JoJo was. He comes to a team with Stanley Cup hopes and a positive attitude, and he all of a sudden is good, and he's able to stop pucks and be a 9-13. So I have no problem keeping him around, or even if we don't see him again, if we do see him for a handful of games next season, even if worst-case scenario comes and JoJo is the backup goaltender to whoever the starting goalie for the Avalanche is next season, whether it's Philip Grubauer or, I don't know, Freddie Anderson or Tuukka Rask or even Marc-Andre Fleury, just to put that out there. I have no problems with JoJo. Solid goalie, solid depth option. This is a solid signing for the team. See no reason to even be concerned about it or even really give it a second thought. He's here to stay for at least the next year, and we'll figure out what to do after that. But most importantly with the Avalanche, yesterday was the wrapping up the NHL awards, and this was definitely the busiest day for the Avalanche and all these awards. I don't even think they got nominated for any of the other ones the days before this, but the Avalanche do walk away empty-handed in terms of awards, but they were nominated for pretty much all of the big ones. Cale Makar up for the Norris with Adam Fox and Victor Hedman. Makar finishes second for the Norris. Nathan MacKinnon up for the Hart. We knew he wasn't going to win this one. He gets third. Connor McDavid, the first unanimous MVP since Wayne Gretzky. He gets every single first place vote, and there's no arguing that. And Philip Grubauer gets third for the Vezina, which does come as a surprise, but the winner itself is a surprise, as Marc-Andre Fleury beats Andre Vasilevsky for the Vezina, which I just quite simply do not agree with. Vasilevsky was unequivocally the best goaltender in the league this season, but I can talk more about that in a second. Some other Avalanche names ended up making the list on the Hart ballots. MacKinnon obviously getting third. Mikko Rantanen ended up getting 10th. I saw him on some ballots as high as second and some third. Like, he definitely got some love for the Hart, and not even from like Colorado guys. Like, saw people from Columbus and Canada giving him some love. Cale Makar finished 12th on the Hart ballot. I think he got at least a second place vote from somebody. I don't remember exactly who, but they get three players on Norris ballots. MacKinnon gets the nomination. No one was beating McDavid, Matthews gets second, but Rantanen gets 10th, Makar gets 12th, and Cale Makar on the Norris ballot just fell short to Adam Fox. He finishes second, and Makar got 31 first place votes, and in terms of points, he got 655, Adam Fox got 743, and it really seems like Makar's candidacy was hurt by the fact that he missed some time due to injury, which I've said before, I don't entirely agree with. I mean, if he deserved it, he deserved it. On my ballot, I would have had Fox just because of how little assistance he had in New York and just how elite he proved himself to be. And through watching Makar, make no mistake, I absolutely love the guy and think he's going to be a Hall of Famer someday, but calling him the best defenseman in the league this season, just with some of the growing that he still has to do, just didn't feel right for me. That would have felt biased. And so I would have had him 2, honestly. Fox 1, Makar 2, McAvoy 3. But Devontae's ended up getting some votes. He finished 11th in the voting, which, I mean, if you told me after the trade last season that Devontae's is even going to get Norris votes whatsoever, I would be thrilled. And, I mean, you guys know I love Devontae's. Like, just a safety blanket of a player. I can't believe we actually ended up getting him in a trade and that we have him for the next 3 seasons. Makes it even a little more ridiculous that the GM we fleeced to get Devontae's, that being Lou Lamoriello, won General Manager of the Year for not really doing much. I mean, the NHL awards, like, they just get worse and worse every year. I mean, they hit on some of these this year, but for me, like, the Vezina and the GM of the Year award were complete flops for me. But it was good to see the Avalanche get some love. They would have been hard-pressed to win any of those. I had solid hopes that Makar was going to bring home the Norris and that maybe Fox wouldn't get enough votes to get it. I was also concerned that Hedman was going to get it, which would have been the worst award handed out of anyone so far. And he ended up getting a fair share of votes, even though he was admittedly hurt for like the tail end of the season and just was not playing the strongest competition for most of the season. He wasn't getting Tampa Bay's toughest matchups. He gets third, and, you know, whatever. He didn't win. That's really all that matters. You don't get extra points for nominations. I mean, you might a little bit, but with the season the Avalanche had and everything, to walk away empty-handed in essentially everything but the President's Trophy is, that's a little tough to stomach, honestly. That's a tough one. We were expecting a cup, expecting a Norris for Makar and MacKinnon to get some more heart love. Ultimately, none of it happens, but the fact that Grubauer got a Vezina nomination is outstanding. Makar coming that close to the Norris is outstanding in just his second season. Great to see Makar and Fox getting Norris love right off the bat early in their careers already. And with the Vezina, I just don't understand how Fleury won that over Vasilevsky. Like I said, Vasilevsky was clearly the best goalie in the league this season. And Fleury was great. Like, make no mistake, he was great this season. But Vasilevsky was just on another level this entire season. And Fleury is 36. He'd never been nominated for the Vezina before. And this just feels to me like giving it to a guy you like because he hasn't won it before. Because I don't see much of an argument for how Fleury wins this over Vasilevsky outside of that, because you have all the people like, oh, he's the first Vezina of his illustrious career and everything, but Vasilevsky only has one Vezina so far. That to me sucks, because he deserves many more than that, and we're gonna look back on Vasilevsky's career later when he's a bit older and maybe at the point that Fleury or Lundqvist is now and wonder how he doesn't have more of those Vezinas. I mean, he has one, And he's been nominated, I believe, for the last several seasons and just fallen short. I mean, Hellebuck deserved it last year. He got, Vasilevsky got third in that one. And just, I don't understand how Fleury got it. I mean, you have Robin Lehner as your backup guy, and Andrei Vasilevsky didn't have really anyone. He had Curtis McElhaney, who's not exactly much of an option. So Vasilevsky had to stomach all of those starts for the entire season. And, I mean, Fleury was great. Like, don't make no mistake. Like, he was a great goalie this season. But to call him the best, like, sorry, I just don't buy that. I don't believe it. And yeah, okay, he had a better save percentage, but if you dig deeper into the numbers, it just shows that Vasilevsky was better and playing a higher quality of shots. So I don't get it. To me, it feels wrong. It feels like they gave it to Fleury because he's old and hasn't won one, and it'll look good for his Hall of Fame candidacy. I mean, I feel like I'm always ripping on Fleury, but I guess I just don't rate him as highly as other people do. I mean, people, they list his three Stanley Cups, but when you really look at it, he's won one. He won one in 2009, and he was the backup for the Penguins in 2016 and 2017. And the last two postseasons for Vegas, he did not finish the playoffs with them. He was not the goalie in net when they were eliminated. It was Robin Lehner both times. He got replaced in the Montreal series because he essentially handed the Canadiens a chance to get right back in it. And for some reason, they started him in Game 5, and then they realized after that that they shouldn't do that again, and Lehner got the start in the final game again. I mean, I said a couple episodes ago, like, Vegas should really probably be looking at trading Fleury as he's entering the final year of his deal. They're spending $12 million on goaltending, and they have other holes that need to be filled in their roster. I'm pretty sure we talked about this either last episode or two episodes ago. But you're spending $12 million on your goaltending. You've signed Lehner for 5 years and just got through the first year of that deal. So you've got 4 years left of him, and Fleury is done after this season. He's a UFA after that. So I just think it would be a savvy move for them to get that $7 million off the books, probably put that into a legitimate top-line center, and get the ransom that you would get for Marc-Andre Fleury in a trade after winning the friggin' Vezina, and continue to build off of that and put a cheaper goaltender in under Lehner, because there's really not much difference between the two. Yes, Fleury was better this season, but they've gone to Lehner when it's mattered most because Fleury just doesn't have the best postseason record. But that's just my take on it. I had Vasilevsky like heads and shoulders above Fleury and Grubauer for the Vezina. Really don't see how Fleury gets it, but I don't have a vote, so my voice doesn't really matter in that discussion. But tough to see the Avalanche walk away empty-handed, but outside of Makar, there wasn't really much argument to be had about any of them. So I still think Makar is going to win his fair share of Norrises over the next few seasons. Tough to see that he's not going to get it after the Calder and be the first guy since Bobby Orr to do that. I was hyping that up all season, so it's a shame that he's not going to get that. But he has plenty of time to win plenty more and add plenty to his resume. But just looking at all the awards handed out to wrap up, Connor McDavid wins the Hart, Adam Fox wins the Norris, Marc-Andre Fleury wins the Vezina, Connor McDavid wins Ted Lindsay for most outstanding player as voted by the players, Kirill Kaprizov wins the Calder very easily, Rod Brind'Amour wins Jack Adams as coach of the year, Alexander Barkov wins the Selke as the best defensive forward, Jacob Slavin wins the Lady Bing as the most gentlemanly player, and Lou Lamoriello wins the General Manager of the Year award. Somehow, I still don't understand how that works, but okay, I guess everything Sakic did and Kelly McCrimmon did and everything that Julien Brisebois did and everything Bill Zito did and Marc Bergevin, that gets all outdone by the Kyle Palmieri trade for the New York Islanders, I guess, and getting fleeced by Joe Sakic for Devontae's in the offseason. I guess that somehow constitutes winning back-to-back General Manager of the Year award. I mean, it's not like Bill Zito took the floundering Panthers and turned them into one of the best teams in his division to finally make the playoffs and finally make them seem like a real team again. And it's not like Joe Sakic has consistently been one of the best general managers in the NHL and put together a ridiculous team this year. And it's not like Kelly McCrimmon then beat that same ridiculous Avalanche team with his own ridiculous team. And it's not like Julien Brisebois has beaten Lou Lamoriello 2 years in a row in the playoffs and is consistently icing one of the best teams in the NHL. I mean, you can argue about the whole cap shenanigans thing, but here's the thing. That's legal, and that should be coming into consideration when it comes to GM of the Year award. He's perfectly allowed to do that. He didn't cheat, so there should definitely be some consideration for GM of the Year award, because in terms of the rule book, that's just a savvy move. So I wouldn't have even have had Lou on my list. I mean, what did Lou do? Like, I feel like this is just another version of Fleury and just giving it to a guy that you like. Because the Islanders didn't do anything. They've just been a good team. Are we giving it to Lou because he hired Barry Trotz in 2018? That was like 3 years ago. Why are we still doing this? Like, look at the Islanders' trade history. Oh, here's a big one. They got Braden Coburn from the Ottawa Senators for a 2022 seventh-round pick. Then, obviously, there was the Palmieri trade. But, like, Palmieri was good. He wasn't, like, a world beater. He was fine. It took until the playoffs for him to do anything. And adding Zajac onto that trade for the Islanders was just meh. And then, literally, a future considerations trade. And then you had the Devontae's trade. Like, we got Devontae's, who just got votes for the Norris. I mean, albeit 11th, but still, like, almost top 10 in the NHL in Norris voting. And we got him for 2 second-round picks. Give me a break. That's not General Manager of the Year. Like, he re-signed Matt Barzal. What else did he do? I'm looking at their cap-friendly right now. Well, they're kind of in a world of shit cap-wise. They got $5 million to sign Anthony Beauvillier, Kyle Palmieri, Casey Cizikas, Adam Pellick, and, like, you're going to do that with $5 million? So they're going to have another situation where they got to dump a guy again in the offseason because he's a back-to-back general manager of the year who consistently has to keep dumping players off of his team because he can't manage the salary cap. So, no, he is not the general manager of the year. The general manager of the year is the guy who wins the cup. And looks like right now that's going to be Julien Brisebois again for the second straight year. And oh, would you look at that, he beat the Islanders both times to get there. Now, obviously, Tampa Bay hasn't won yet. They won Game 1, by the way. They dominate Game 1 by a final score of 5-1 in just... it was dominant. There's no other way to put it. They dominated the Montreal Canadiens in Game 1 and really made Montreal look human again and come back down to earth. I mean, they score early. I mean, Montreal got a very lucky bounce for their lone goal of the game, but Tampa pulled away late in this one. And they even broke Montreal's historic penalty kill streak with a power play goal late in the third. Does Montreal have a chance in this series? Game one has to hurt, but obviously they're obviously not done yet. But I just don't see how you can beat Tampa Bay 4 out of the next 6 games if it goes 7 without just getting absurdly lucky. I mean, the thing going in their favor right now is that the last 3 teams that have won Game 1 in the Stanley Cup Final have lost the series dating back to 2018. Vegas won Game 1 against the Capitals. They lost the next 4 games. Boston won Game 1 against St. Louis. They lost that series in 7. Dallas won Game 1 against Tampa Bay last year. They lost that series in 6. So, maybe Montreal still has it. Maybe there's another level that we haven't seen with them. But, like, in the Stanley Cup Final, I don't know if I buy that. Oh, we didn't have our best game. We need to bring it a little more. You're telling me you didn't have enough in Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final? Give me a break. I mean, I'm not saying Montreal's dead and they're going to get swept. I still think they're going to put up a fight in this series, but you got to beat Tampa Bay 4 times and they have to beat you 3. And Tampa Bay has the better goaltending. I fully believe Vasilevsky is better than Price and has been better than Price in the playoffs. Price has been second, but Vasilevsky's just been number one. Nikita Kucherov scored 3 points in game one. That was my big point of contention of, like, if Kucherov is banged up, this is going to be a very close series. And he scores 2 goals and records another assist. So now he's got 3 points in game one. So that wipes away a lot of my concerns. Braden Point with 3 assists in game one. Steven Stamkos with a goal and a power play goal, no less. I mean, not a good start if you're Montreal and trying to build momentum. I mean, as I'm recording this, game two is tonight. I'm fairly certain. Yeah, game two is tonight. And maybe they can bounce back with a much better performance. But even if they do, what does that look like? Do they stop 2 goals from going in for Tampa Bay and score 1 or 2 more themselves? Okay, well, that's barely enough based on last game to force overtime. Like, this Tampa Bay team is just so good. And if Kucherov looks healthy and Vasilevsky looks on his game, I mean, granted, Montreal only had 19 shots in game one. They didn't really test him all that much. Tampa Bay can just beat you in so many ways. Like, if Montreal drags this series down into a dogfight, Tampa Bay can honestly do that better than they can. If they want to turn this into a low-shot, low-scoring affair, Tampa Bay can do that too. Goaltending duel, Tampa Bay can win that, and Montreal does not want this to turn into like a trading chances series because Tampa Bay will dominate that. I mean, just, it's like I talked about when I was previewing this series, is that sometimes you have these underdog stories get to the final, but more often than not, they really fizzle out after that once they get to the final, because it's hard to really feel like an underdog in the final. I mean, this is pretty lopsided, but still, like, Montreal deserves to be here. They know they deserve to be here, and Tampa Bay is clearly going to take them seriously. I mean, it's the final, and they're trying to win back-to-back cups. I mean, you're not going to catch a team off guard, be like, whoa, they're better than we thought in the final. Vegas, as poorly as they played, I mean, at least they had an excuse, like, oh, we're getting the winner of the Canadian division, and we just beat the best team in hockey. Yeah, maybe we can take them a little lightly. With Tampa Bay, it's like, okay, they beat Vegas. Clearly, they're for real. This is the Stanley Cup final. If we don't take them seriously, we're not winning back-to-back cups. Montreal still has a chance in this series. Game two, I think, is going to be very indicative of how this series is going to go. Like, if Montreal can at least, I don't know, get this game to overtime. I mean, if they just outright win, that's a whole nother story, but they've got a real uphill battle taken on this Tampa Bay team. Tampa Bay's been here. They have everything that they need. There's just nothing. There's not really many advantages that Montreal has over them. And to see Tampa Bay put up 5 in the first game against, really, what was the story is, can Montreal shut down their top players? No. Kucherov scores twice. Stamkos gets a power play goal. Point gets 3 assists. I mean, yeah, okay, they held him off the board, but Jesus, he assisted on 3 goals. I don't think you can really take any pride in that. And, I mean, Alex Killorn's not playing in game two. I will see if that has any effect. I mean, you might be listening to this whenever you listen to this, and game two will already be in the books, and I might just be sounding like a babbling moron as this series goes back to Montreal tied. But that's tough. It's a real tough position for them to be in. I just don't, like, the Islanders gave Tampa Bay everything they could handle, but they couldn't beat them 4 times. And I want to see Montreal win. I think that would be cool. I want them to win in Montreal, but I just don't see how they can do it without getting so absurdly lucky. And I know Montreal has great 5-on-5 numbers, and coming into this series, they're actually pretty close to Tampa in terms of 5-on-5, and Tampa Bay is just so dominant on the power play that they've relied on that a lot more to get deep in the postseason. But to see how much Tampa dominated 5-on-5 in Game 1 has me question that a little more. I just, 4 times over the next 6 games, that's gonna be rough, really rough for them to do. I mean, like, my ideal series was Montreal in six. That means they'd have to lose one more game for the rest of this series in order for that to happen. That's the only way they can win the Stanley Cup on home ice. That's a lot to ask. So, we'll see if they can get it done. I just don't know if they can. I don't want it to sound like I'm doubting them. I'm rooting for them. I mean, I don't want to say rooting for them because I really don't care who wins this series. It does not affect my fandom or, like, my interests of hockey or anything like that. I'm fine with Tampa Bay. Defending champ is cool. But Montreal, fun underdog story, Canadian team. I'd love to see that more than a defending champ. That's where my rooting for Montreal comes from. But I just do not see how you can do it without getting lucky. It would just be really lucky if they did. And that can happen. It's hockey. Things happen all the time. It's not like Tampa Bay went undefeated. I mean, obviously they didn't have Kucherov the entire season, but I was saying the same about Vegas last round. Like, I just don't see how Montreal wins four games against the Golden Knights, and they won four of six games. To series didn't even have to go seven. So we'll see if the loss can wake them up. I don't even know if it would matter if it did. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to get swept. I'm not even saying it'll be a five-game series. Like, I think Tampa Bay in six is a pretty reasonable bet. But I just don't know how they win four games against this team when Tampa's just firing as well as they are right now. I mean, Tampa Bay just doesn't have weaknesses. Montreal has weaknesses. Tampa Bay just doesn't. And those weaknesses get exposed in the playoffs. Tampa Bay, they just don't have them. Yeah, their power play is better than their 5-on-5, but that doesn't mean their 5-on-5 is bad. It's still one of the best in the league, and Montreal has really good 5-on-5 numbers, but just they're going to have to give it everything they have and also get a lot of bounces their way, and Carey Price is going to probably have to play the best hockey of his life. I mean, not at all saying he did not play well in game one, but 22 saves on 27 shots, like, that's not going to win you the series against Tampa. Not blaming him whatsoever, but he's going to need to be otherworldly for them to win games in this series. I mean, Vasilevsky, you just know alone that he's going to be. Like, even if you have a good opportunity on him, there's no guarantee that puck is going to go in with just how great he's been in these playoffs. So we'll see if Montreal can do it. I just don't think that they can. And if they do, I'm not going to feel stupid, because that just makes the story all that much better to see that Montreal actually did it. It'd be a true underdog story. I mean, that's what makes this so special, that this run that they're on is that it is unexpected. And, like, I've seen a lot of people backpedaling on their takes. They're like, well, I don't want to be wrong about Montreal this time. I'll pick them in the final. You can pick Tampa Bay. It's okay. Like, you can be wrong. That's what makes this run so special. I mean, I've picked against Montreal in every single round. I picked the Leafs in six. I picked the Jets in six. I think I picked Vegas in five. And now I'm picking Tampa Bay in six. It happens. You're wrong. It's hockey. I think the worst playoffs for me in terms of predictions. I think I got Colorado right. I'm just trying to think of the first round. I got Toronto wrong. I got Edmonton wrong. I got Colorado right. I got Vegas right. I got Tampa Bay right and Carolina right. I got the Penguins wrong and I got the Bruins right. My first round wasn't that bad, actually. But the second round, I got the Bruins wrong. I got the Avalanche wrong. I didn't even have anyone in the North. And I actually did have Tampa Bay. Maybe now that I'm saying this out loud, it's not that bad. But only for me, one of four teams in the Final Four is not good enough. I think I did have Tampa Bay in the final. I don't know, maybe this isn't as bad as I thought it was, but still, I've had years much better than this. And, like, I was pretty confident about most of my picks. So to have only one team in the Final Four is a bit of a stab to my ego. But I'll recover. So game one in the books. Game two tonight. It'll be done by the time you're hearing this. And by July 11th, the Stanley Cup will be handed out. And We might even have a few moves in the books by then, maybe for the Avalanche, maybe for other teams. I mean, this Jack Eichel thing, just to get off topic, seems like it's going to boil over at any moment, doesn't it? Like, there's no way he comes back. I think that's going to boil over at any moment. I don't think it's going to happen during the final. I think the NHL would like probably be trying to prevent that, just because they don't want probably one of their biggest trades in the last decade to be going down while the Stanley Cup is being handed out and played for. So I think they'd probably veto that until the offseason officially begins anyway. I don't even know if they can do that, but I think they would heavily discourage the trade from happening. But with the Duncan Keith thing we talked about at the beginning of the episode, I mean, that might be breaking the second I hit stop on this recording. But, I mean, thinking about it more, they said the Pacific Northwest and Western Canada. That's actually not very many teams. Is Seattle in that mix? Is Seattle making a move before the expansion draft? I don't know if they would do that, but, like, Duncan Keith, like, we can be honest, he's washed. He's very, very washed now at 38 years old. And he says 2 years left at, I believe, is it around $5.5 million? I'd have to look him up on Cap Friendly real quick, because I don't know the details of that contract off of the top of my head. I think I'm close, isn't it? 2 years for, where is he? I was actually very close. 2 years at 5.538. So he's 37. He's going to be 38 when next season starts. His birthday is in less than a month. There's no way Vancouver is trading for Duncan Keith, right? I mean, for this to be a good trade for whoever's getting him, they have to be getting, like, assets back from a Chicago team that is trying to rebuild. I don't know how that, like, this seems weird. Until I get the details, I don't know what to make of this, but there's no way Jim Benning in Vancouver is really trying to get Duncan Keith, right? 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 He's not that dumb, right? Right? Oh, man. Oh, that's a horrible thought. He might actually be doing that. Oh, my God. I mean, Seattle would be interesting. I mean, they've got no players. They've got Luke Hedman, who they signed to an entry-level deal, but that's their only guy. So, I mean, they could get Keith as just, like, a guy to have. And if Chicago's going to give them assets, I mean, maybe that wouldn't be a terrible move. Like, you just have a leader in the locker room in Keith. You have him for 2 years. And you get the assets that would come along in that trade. That would make more sense than, like, Vancouver or Calgary or Edmonton. Like, Pacific Northwest and Western Canada, like, that's really not a big number. Like, Seattle, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton. Is there any other team in the Pacific Northwest that I need to remember? Like, is Anaheim in that mix? I don't think so. I don't think so anyway, but, like, that's just a weird move. I don't see why anyone would want to do that, but I don't know. I'm not an NHL GM, and I mean, not all NHL GMs are very smart, but I'm certainly not one of them, so what does that say about me? It really depends on what Chicago is giving another team to take on Keith. There's no way that Vancouver would be trading for him to contribute to their team. Like, that, if that trade comes down that way, and that's actually what happens, he's probably going to get dragged out of his office by Canucks fans. Like, he shouldn't be back this year anyway. He should have been fired, well, years ago. But if he makes that trade and is actively still hurting this team when they still have these contracts to still sign with the likes of... Is Pettersson signed? I forget. I legitimately don't remember if Elias Pettersson is signed. Are they doing that this offseason, or did they already do that? No, that's this offseason. Oh my God, it's him. This is the offseason with Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. Oh my God, there's no way, right? There's no way they'd be adding $5 million to their cap. No way. Even Benning wouldn't do that. There's just no way. So that'll be an interesting one to watch. I don't know when that's going to break, but for the Avalanche themselves, outside of JoJo, there's really been nothing I mean, I wouldn't expect there to be anything while the playoffs are still going on. Maybe we'll hear about a Landeskog extension or a Makar extension soon. More likely Makar than anything else. I mean, there's some validity to waiting until after the expansion draft to protect Landeskog if you do leave him unprotected so you can hold on to his UFA rights. I don't know if they would do that anyway, but would be interesting to watch regardless still. But I'm not expecting anything to happen with the Avalanche for the next little bit, probably up until the expansion draft, and with the awards talk done and everything and Makar not getting anything. I don't know, I might be struggling for things to talk about on the next few episodes, but I don't know. We'll see. That's a problem for another day. But I think that's going to do it for this edition of the Tell It Abs It Is podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Remember to rate on Apple Podcasts if you're there. Follow me on Twitter at GYoungsNHL and follow the show at Tell It Abs It Is. If you have any questions you'd like answered on the next episode or just answered by me in general, send me a tweet or send me a DM. I'll do my best to get back to you on time. I'm a forgetful person. I miss things, but I promise I'll do my best. But thanks again so much for listening. I have been your host, Griffin Youngs. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will catch you all next time.